I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, Melinda is back with me, and boy, we've been talking about all kinds of things. Had a few Facebook threads going, a variety of people weighed in, and we thought we would just talk about some of that. So, Melinda, welcome.
Hey there. You know, the only bad part about this.
Yes.
You know what the bad part is.
Yes, I do. You're not across from the kitchen table from me today.
In Sarasota,
yes.
I might add.
Okay, all right. I was trying to, like, keep that, not say that. So, yeah. I know.
Yep, I'm back in the Chicago area and trying not to be jealous.
But, you know, it's spring. You're getting warmer up there and nicer.
Oh, yeah.
Is it gorgeous. Sunny today?
Off and on.
Okay.
I think we have 6 days of rain ahead, so I'm asking God to send the sun despite the weather forecast.
Okay, good.
Because I'm a sun person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But you can't beat spring in the Midwest, right?
I know. Or, it's beautiful. Yeah, the redbud trees, magnolia trees. That's the stuff I don't have down here. Though we have gold trees and jacaranda trees that are beautiful in full bloom. They're all flowers, and then the leaves come out when the flowers go by. So, you know, it's just a different version of spring.
Got to appreciate where you're, what you have, where you're at, right?
Absolutely. Well, let's get into this stuff. Can't even remember the thread that was going on, whether it was on Friends of Midday. And by the way, if you're not aware that when Midday Connection ended, we started a Friends of Midday Facebook page. Would love to have you like that and share that with others, because there are all kinds of thought starters on that page daily. And Melinda, you do a great job of curating that and keeping that going. So I greatly appreciate that. But folks can come there and be a part of the conversation.
Also, you post a link to your podcast every Monday.
Yes,
and Mike, your husband's
on Friday.
Great 10-point rumblings every Friday, which talk about thought starters. So that's there too.
Yeah, that's all there, and then on your own Facebook page and mine, various threads of thought are going as well. So I'm not sure which one. Where we posted about Brené Brown, and you had some great quotes from her book, The Gift of Imperfection, and
is because you, I think you and somebody else mentioned that book.
Okay.
Brown's The Gift of Imperfection.
That's
so,
right.
And you were saying in this thread, it meant so much to you, and I have never read a Brené Brown book. I guess I'm the one person in America. And so I went on Amazon and looked it up, and I could read the preface of the book. So I found a few quotes from that preface that I think I posted and sent your way. And so anyway, we thought about talking about that today.
Well, and I think I've loved her material. Her first book on shame, she's a shame researcher, which I think I remember her saying no one grows up to want to be immersed in and researching shame, but she's been helpful to so many. And her book, her first book beyond the shame research book, is this one, The Gifts of Imperfection. She's gone on to write several others, Daring Greatly, and some other great titles as well. And I know she's got a very well-known TED Talk. I'll post a link to the TED Talk on vulnerability that has been listened to by millions. And I have never watched that, interestingly enough. But that's, I guess, one of the things she's really well-known for. Let me make a note. But this is the quote, and I will say that when I pulled out my book, The Gifts of Imperfection, I underlined practically everything in the book. It was hit me where I needed it at the time, which was probably around 2010, 11, somewhere in there. So this is, these are the quotes that you posted, and maybe this can be a good jumping off point. People may call what happens at midlife a, quote, crisis, but it's not. It's an unraveling, a time when you feel a desperate pull to live the life you want to live, not the one you're supposed to live. The unraveling is a time when you are challenged by the universe to let go of who you think you're supposed to be and to embrace who you are. Midlife is certainly one of the great unraveling journeys, but there are others that happen to us over the course of our lives. marriage, divorce, becoming a parent, recovery, moving, an empty nest, retiring, experiencing loss or trauma, working in a soul-sucking job. The universe is not short on wake-up calls. We're just quick to hit the snooze button. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this just so intrigued me because, you know, we've talked before about you and Mike making the big move from the Chicago area to Sarasota, which, you know, I always say was in a 3-month time period. I know you'd been thinking about it, but all of a sudden, you know, you guys decide this is what you're going to do. You get the painters in, the stagers, you remodel, you get a realtor, you sell, you move. And, you know, it's really been interesting to watch a close friend do that. And I think that Dave and I are facing into our own restlessness as well.
Sure.
Did we talk about this? Did you guys feel a restlessness or did it feel more like necessity?
It felt more like necessity, but I felt a restlessness certainly at our past job. I felt a huge restlessness there. Yeah. Just didn't know how that would all play out.
Yeah.
But not as much with the move. That felt a little bit more like necessity in the moment. But I think this whole restlessness thing is not uncommon for anyone in midlife.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. I'm actually talking to a life coach in the area, and she has said this is all so normal. But it's sort of startling. I've been thinking in the last week or so that, like, life, we had two children, so it's like you're climbing this mountain, climbing up, 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 then you're holding hands with these two kids.
Yep.
You're buying the next big house and the next big house because culture here says, well, you need to get more room and more space and have the kids over, you know, their friends in high school and all that. And you're kind of building this life with children and they're different ages. So this could be well over 20 years by the time they're all out of the house. So I feel like we've gotten to the top of this mountain. The kids are no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
We're going down the other side. And I sort of pictured this sort of really beautiful valley. I don't know where I got this imagery, and it's sort of morbid, but, you know, on the horizon is my casket.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you got to face that.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
But now coming down into this sort of beautiful verdant valley, I'm only with Dave. I'm, you know, now we're feeling much more vulnerable, you know, as we get older, you know, will that partner be there? Yeah. Where are we going, and how do we create new life without the same old structures in place?
Right.
Kids, where are they going? What are we doing with them? What about this house we live in? We don't need all this house anymore. So, you know, when she talks about this being an unraveling, I think that has really surprised me.
Yeah.
Now, I have two parents that were older than I am, and they opted and moved and built a townhouse in Southern California and had a great new life. My mom's passed away. My dad's 98 in a continuing care place, has an apartment. You know, no problem. I've interviewed my dad on this.
Wow. Oh, so they were older when they made this move. I always picture them as being younger. So glad you said that.
Yeah. Hmm. So, you know, I think it's different for everybody.
Yes.
Definitely. And your experience and mine is different as well. But, you know, she talks about this unraveling, a time when you feel a desperate pull to live the life you want to live, not the one you're supposed to live. And, you know, Dave and I started thinking the other night, I said, who are the people we know that are our friends and our friends' pool that actually have picked up and moved somewhere else?
Yeah. Could you
zero.
Know, list? Oh, really?
Zero. And then I said, well, Anita and Mike. And he goes, okay, yeah. Other than that, people are beginning to talk about that.
Hmm.
But I'm thinking, you know, anytime we're thinking of pulling up stakes, whether we relocate locally or elsewhere, not everybody chooses that or feels that.
That's true. You know, I probably have a few more in my sphere that have done that. A couple from church that pulled up stakes, kids were gone, and they always wanted to live in Colorado, so away they went.
Okay.
And then another couple, as soon as our last one graduates from high school, we're putting the house up for sale, and he barely had walked down the aisle to get his diploma, and the for sale sign went up, and you know, so, but I've not talked with either of them. Of course, one of them hasn't moved yet, still working to sell the house. But the other couple who's been in Colorado a long time, I've not had the conversation about, you know, what was that like to pull up stakes and go?
Yeah.
You know, I've got another.
I think I must live around some deeply rooted people.
Well, and also, I think your community is a deeply rooted one as well. I mean, not your personal community of friends, but just that geographic community right where you are, that town, I feel like has deeper roots for the average person. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think also if you start having grandkids and they're in the area, you're not going anywhere, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. But I'm intrigued kind of about this idea of what we feel we're supposed to live like. And is this sort of midlife unraveling, this opportunity, like Brené Brown says, to really look at, you know, am I supposed to be this or am I going to embrace who I am? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys felt any of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that whole conversation about life purpose and feeling that draining away or not as upfront and central as it once was, or not as big of a deal, felt very, very foreign. You know, and
that's that being at the top of the mountain.
Right.
So add that in. The kids aren't there anymore. The house is too big, and job change.
Right.
Job shift. Mm-hmm. And add in perhaps a faith shift.
Right.
You know, as well. And all of a sudden, I feel like I'm standing at this top of the mountain, going, "Holy mackerel! What?" You know, there are lots of books and information out there about how to move forward in life with children.
Right.
But where is the stuff, you know, other than AARP, which...
They've got some good stuff, but I...
Has its own meaning.
I feel too young. I was going to say, I feel too young to go there, but
Who's writing or talking about, wherever this comes, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, sort of this new repurposing...
Mm-hmm.
of our gifts.
Well, and Mike and I went to a retreat since we've been down here for the church that we landed in, had a retreat called Reignite. I mean, and you can kind of tell from the name that it indeed was attended by us and older than us people who were, you know, wanting to kind of figure things out for not necessarily a second career. It's not,
mm-hmm.
But what might life look like in this stage? And I'm kind of struck also by that word supposed to live, not, you know, live the life you want to live, not the one you're supposed to live. And I get stuck on that. It's not okay for me to want anything. That's where I get stuck, you know, then I better be in the, what I'm supposed to live category. But so this maybe gives me different things to think about.
Do you think that's because you're an evangelical?
Oh, yeah.
You're used to that.
Yeah.
Kind of thinking.
That's easy to answer quickly. Yes.
Yeah. You said not a second career generally, and I don't think of it as that either, but it is this idea to me of repurposing myself in a new way. I mean, I don't know that I really want to go back to the job I had previously, but I'm sort of wondering what is that new space looking like? And I know you and Mike are having to find that too, in a new geographic space.
Yeah. I mean, what's life giving? I mean, this takes you back. And I was just talking, so I do spiritual direction. I was talking to a directee the other day, and, you know, she made this comment about, I'm going to forget exactly what it was, but the essence is, I need the memory drugs. I just wrote that down on my grocery list. Buy the memory drug at Walgreens.
Some new vitamin, huh?
Some new something or other,
You talked about what is life-giving.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So she was talking about that whole thing about, you know, what is life-giving and life-draining, and she was saying, shouldn't I know that by now? And she's much younger than I am. And I, of course, I'm sure I had some profound spiritual director question to pose at that moment. But in my head, I was thinking, and actually I did say to her, no, this is an ongoing journey of self-discovery. You never know once and for all, partly because new pieces of ourselves are unfolding along the way. So it's this ongoing journey, and I hear many, and I've said it myself, say in frustration, oh, seriously, I'm just now learning this? Well, you know, that's where I think it has, the older I get, I'm getting a little kinder with myself about that, because it is an ongoing journey, and that's absolutely okay. We're not who we were at age 30.
Yeah.
Or even at age 40, we're not the same person.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting that she talks, too, about these other unraveling journeys, like marriage, which is a good thing.
Yes, yeah.
But still, you know, it can be a big change. Divorce, becoming a parent, retiring, loss or trauma, empty nest, moving.
Yeah, all of those things.
Even our jobs.
Yep. And sometimes those things are can be coupled together. It's not just one at a time, too, which I think is its own mountain to climb. But yeah, there's this constant unraveling, and I, you know, she says that midlife, what happens at midlife, people may call it a crisis, but it's not. I'm not so sure. I mean, she says it's an unraveling. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
But I think in that unraveling, we can sometimes feel like we're in crisis.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. It does feel like,
or
can feel like a
yes,
crisis.
I do think so.
And I also think we're used to living charmed lives.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true, in the West especially.
Yeah, right. And so things are going along smoothly. And I think in evangelicalism, we also unite that thought secretly when we're those code phrases, in God's will, or
right.
Everything's lined up spiritually, kind of, we do get a charmed life.
Yeah, but that's,
you know, and,
yeah. That's yeah. That law of linear thinking that we've grabbed onto and really has been taught to us. If you do, you know, A plus B equals C, you just keep doing these things and your kids will turn out beautifully, you know, or whatever, fill in the blank, doesn't it?
Right.
You marry this Christian person and it's going to be the marriage made in heaven, never an issue. It's just faulty teaching, on these things.
Well, what I'm really learning to recognize is that this unraveling probably does not have a time frame. I don't know how long it will last. And that in that time, there are certainly things for me to do that are internal to... You know, what does God call up in me? What's being stirred up in my emotions, or stuff I've set aside that I'll deal with later, or I didn't have time to deal with because I was working full time and commuting. And I realized that about our former job, where we were talking with great minds and thought leaders all the time.
Yes.
So it kind of covered over, or gave me a sense that I was growing, taking in information, which I did, but I didn't have the space that I have now, not being employed, to really access that and say, well, what does it mean for me?
It's a great point.
And, you know, any journey involves exertion.
Yes.
And effort and new skills and new learning. I think of the Israelites hanging out for 40 years in the desert, waiting for their promised land, which was going to be its own deal. So they're learning how to live in a new territory. They're learning how to not be bored all day. Mm-hmm. They're learning how to know God, how to deal with their frustration, their impatience.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I think you also need to add to that we also need journeying partners along the way. And I think there are many, many people that have not cultivated relationships along the way, so that when they get to these real unraveling issues that we're talking about, they don't have people to converse with about it or bounce things off of or walk with them, you know, on the journey. I think that's not a small, an insignificant deal. And, you know, I'll say to people too, it's never too late to develop those relationships. They do take time, but it's worth investing because we need those partners on the journey.
I noticed on that Facebook thread where I posted this quote, somebody wrote that she's looking for those people. And she's thinking, she said, what if I start a closed Facebook group where the like-minded can talk? I said, go for it. Sign me up and I'll quietly spread the word with others. I mean, I hope she does it. I'm going to encourage her to do it because I think that would be great, don't you?
I do. And I think it's funny because even in spiritual direction, somebody came to me via a closed Facebook group. It was like-minded women that were talking about some deeper issues, and spiritual direction was something that was raised. And I think because you don't always find these people in your geographic area, I think that's a great point. I saw that comment too and loved it.
Yeah. And the theme of the group, kind of the direction of it, would be, hey, I'm on a changing life journey.
Yep.
What the heck?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, something else we also were talking about is this other blog I found about downsizing.
This was great. I loved this post. Yeah.
And how nobody wants their parents' stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And what do you do with the ceramic whatevers, fill in the blanks, pheasants, or the grandfather clock, or, you know, none of us knows what to do with that Noritake or Lennox china that we have and haven't used for years.
Right.
I remember asking somebody if their wife was big on Etsy. I don't know if it was Etsy. I guess it was Craigslist, maybe.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Maybe, not Etsy, I guess. And, if she could sell my china, he goes, oh, there's no market for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's no, I haven't used it. I can't remember that I've used it in the 14 years we've lived in this house.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I also posted that on Facebook as well. And I posted it with a family thread, like my sisters-in-law, my brother, my daughter, my husband.
Yeah, you got a lot of comments on your Facebook page. I'm looking at it now. I think 20-some comments from people that responded to that article, which is titled, Lock the Door, Your Boomer Parents Have Decided to Downsize. Well, and I asked my son and his fiance, you know, do you want the dining room set that I've been trying to keep in the family? It was my grandparents from Northern Maine, you know, and it was, you know, it wasn't even a polite pause, like, to think about it. It was, no. Like, okay.
What did you do with that?
You know what? It went to Goodwill in Chicago, in Illinois. Went to Goodwill, just nowhere.
Was that hard?
No. In the end, no. You know what? In the end, toward the end of a move, you're happy to just get rid of things. It really helps.
You were desperate.
Desperate. A desperation will push a lot of things out the door.
Well, it was interesting. My sister-in-law wrote on this family email thread, she said, you know, I feel like we're losing touch with the older generation. And, you know, kids don't want, you know, she acknowledged kids don't want the stuff. She said, long gone are the days of hearing of our family history and mixing our grandma's favorite cake in grandma's mixing bowl. No one has the time or cares. You know, for that, and that we're moving really quick. And she really wondered if, like, if not only our tchotchkes will get outdated, but maybe the people will too.
That's an interesting comment. And I'm kind of curious to ask my history, you know, history loving major son, because he doesn't want the stuff, but he does want the stories. He want, you know, obviously, he believes in the importance and necessity of history. I'll have to pick his brain on that later.
That's interesting. Yeah. I realized I didn't care too much about family history in my 20s, 30s. Like, what millennial is going to care, especially when there's so much more that's attractive out there to pay attention to with technology these days? I didn't give a lot of thought to what came before, and my parents moved to California, and I didn't grab a lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, my sister-in-law grabbed those, you know, those salt shakers and pepper shakers. They're clear glass and they have the bumps on the sides.
Yes.
Everybody had them.
Yep.
She has my grandma's.
Okay. Okay.
But I ended up with her mom's. I kind of like, that's a little thing that, yeah, I thought was cool that I remembered. But, you know, do we want to pay, as Marcia Ramslin, the organizer, says, 60 cents a pound to move this stuff?
Ooh.
And then store it? And if we're not using it?
Especially those of us who are lovers of books. I mean, the books that we got of, you know, because that's, I mean, they're heavy. Speaking of 60 cents a pound, that adds up in a hurry.
But my books, I can't part with my books.
Yeah, well, we didn't.
They're my friends.
Yeah, they were, we brought a lot with us. Well, we didn't do traditional movers, which helped. So it wasn't, it was more the space boxes took up as opposed to the weight. And that helped. I can't imagine the weight of those. But yeah, but you have to think about all of these things.
Well, I think too that kids today, they don't need the hand-me-downs. Like when I had my first apartment, mm-hmm, I was glad for hand-me-downs because
Absolutely. There
was no Target.
Right. Or
you
IKEA.
Know, there was Kohl's. What'd you say?
Or IKEA, you know, also.
Right, yeah.
Where you could get things inexpensively.
I mean, yeah, but today, you know, they can go and get stuff for cheap that's hip-looking.
Yeah.
You know, at some of those stores, you know. And I think that they've gotten smart. They don't really want to collect stuff, mm-hmm, as well. They want to have experiences.
Yeah.
You know, where I got married, I got wine goblets with gold trim to match the gold on my good china. I opened a cabinet recently and they were there. I had no idea. I had forgotten about them.
Of course, I think about gold on china and go, oh, you can't put it in the microwave. Can't heat anything up on it. It has gold right on it. That's funny.
Well, it's too fancy. And yeah, I think times change too. And you have to say the look changes, what we're into, of course, changes, you know. But some kids are sentimental. They'll take stuff.
Right.
You know, my son wanted his grandfather's big overstuffed chair. And he likes stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
And it's hard to give away like those old fur coats and all that. I went into a resale shop recently and they were lined up. A bunch of fur coats.
Wow.
Well, when we were kids, they were status symbols.
Right. And
who could afford those?
And there wasn't the animal rights movement when we were kids.
Right.
Right.
Oh. So see, that's what I think has impacted us too. It's not ethical to have those.
Right. Yeah.
And we're more conscious about how we repurpose and use things.
Yeah.
And I also did some reading this winter about that Hygge culture.
Oh, yeah. Denmark.
Sweden and Denmark and Norway. Sort of this more, you know, more than accumulating or storing things. It's kind of about creating a cozy, hospitable environment. Mm-hmm. People are important with minimal stuff.
Yeah.
It's a different day.
Totally different. And I will say.
However,
yeah. Okay. Go ahead. However.
We still have to downsize. All that can make intellectual sense, but how do we give away our much-loved stuff?
Well, and I was just about to say that in the process of downsizing and getting rid of, I felt lighter by the second. I really,
was that good?
It was phenomenal. Clean, you know, and of course you also clean out just general junk that you didn't want but just hadn't taken the time to clean out. So that, of course, feels good, but along the way you just realize, wow, what I've spent some money on that I thought was important has sat here on a shelf or has been in a closet that I've used once or maybe even never.
Mm-hmm.
It felt so good just to get rid of, and I understand the joy of doing all that. And I will say different people are predisposed to be the declutterers too. And God bless you if you're one of them, because you're giving a great gift to your kids if you're someone like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My dad's 98, and he gets worried. Like, he'll say to me, who's going to take those, you know, paintings from Thailand? Or how it'll cost too much if you want the big coffee, glass-heavy coffee table. And, you know, he gave my daughter's boyfriend this golf putter recently that's really old. And he was so happy that someone wanted his stuff. But I realized that a lot of stuff that's in my home of origin is stuff that he's collected from having a traveling job.
Sure.
So we've got stuff, you know, from Egypt and Asia and Poland and all over the world, and it sort of anchors him to his past life,
right,
where he had real meaning.
Yeah.
And I think he wants to know that he is going to live on. You know, they, like these glasses from Lake Lawn Lodge in Wisconsin that he and my mom bought, you know.
Isn't that interesting?
I think they connect them to,
yeah,
it connects them to my mom, well, and the good times they had together. And
I think an interesting exercise in light of that, I mean, I hadn't thought of this, but I think an interesting exercise for any of us would be to look around our home, whether you're going to be decluttering or not, and figure out what are those things that we would feel really badly about if they weren't passed on, and why.
Right.
And what's yeah, attached to that, and why, and that'd be interesting just yeah, to think about.
Because you can say, yeah, take a picture of it and give it away or sell it, but you're right. There's some stuff that actually seems like it's part of our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we're actually, there's a thread from us to that object, and
yeah,
it's part of us. And, you know, like you wouldn't give away the books that you authored, Anita, or would you give away those covers in the, that are framed, you know,
yeah,
maybe someday you will, but you moved those.
They, I know,
mean something. That's a big
yeah,
part of your life. The book,
yeah,
two books that you wrote.
I know. And I will say the thought of those sitting in a resale store, you know, I would think, I wonder if John would want those, you know, hey, my mom did this, but,
right,
but here's the thing. They take up big space. So I also get why, you know what, no, we only have so much wall space, Mom, and now we have, I mean, he doesn't have kids yet, but I can picture him saying, no, now we got kids and I want those pictures up. So in that
right,
sense, I totally get it.
Because they're building their life.
Right, right. And I think that's where, as parents, we need to, or whoever we are trying to pass stuff on, I think we really need to give permission for people to say no, not make them feel bad. Because I have been in, I've seen scenarios where, you know, someone's really pressing and pushing for you to take something and you feel bad if you don't take it. And so you might take it and stuff it somewhere and, you know, pull it out when they visit or something, you know.
Right, right, right.
So I think we've got to tell our kids, you know, don't feel guilty. I always tell John, if I ever make you feel guilty, tell me. And he goes, oh, I will.
Well, I wonder if there's some things that we continue in this sort of unraveling process, to quote Brené Brown, that we were talking about, that you do carry with you because it is part of your history and it is part of your life, and
yeah,
you shouldn't have to give it away now.
Right.
But, you know, when we're gone, do with it what you want.
Yep.
You know,
I think
do
that's
with it what you will. I think they are treasured memories, and I think they also prove that we had meaning or made a mark in the world or had value. And, you know, those things are great memories and sustainers.
Yeah, I think you're right. But not to be foisted on other people.
There you go.
Yeah.
The unraveling process.
Ooh. Well, you know, I would recommend the gifts of imperfection to someone if you're in that place. Let go, the subtitle, let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are.
And like, I have a life coach and I've been to a counselor and I'm reading more about the Enneagram,
yeah,
seeing who I am and, you know, how that plays out for the future. And yeah, I guess I don't have a lot of answers yet, but onward we go, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
I think what you said about doing it in community,
I think that's important. And because sometimes you come up with answers together, or sometimes you just need to bounce it off of someone to make sure you don't, you know, sometimes you feel crazy in the unraveling,
right,
or in the journey. And
yeah,
that's all part of it.
Yeah.
Well, stuff to think about, huh?
Yeah, okay, I have to ask you one last question, though. So where do you think you are in this journey? I mean, I know I asked you this just a couple weeks ago, but
Where am I in this self-discovery?
What is sustaining you, having made a move? I know
You
have directees for spiritual direction, and, you know, I know that Mike's taking a sabbatical, but
Yeah,
you guys seem like you're kind of at peace with this moment.
Sort of are. What I find interesting, though, is that any given moment, and this always still surprises me, feeling, in fact, I even had this thought the day before yesterday, I feel really settled, like we're kind of coming into our own. I wake up the next morning, I watch a little YouTube video, and I burst into tears. And still not totally sure what that's about. I think it was maybe a connection to Chicago. It's that those transitional sadnesses are still there, and the realities. And I think we are feeling more and more anchored, but that is something that takes time. And I'm just realizing that I just have to continue being aware and give myself permission and you know, not be really kind to myself. You know, when the tears flow, let them flow. It's like, you know what?
Yeah.
You've made this big move. This is big. It's a big deal. It's okay. You're going to off and on feel this way, but wow, those times are fewer and farther between than they were 4 months ago.
So it doesn't sound like you have glommed onto that it's supposed to be this way kind of business.
No.
Yeah.
No. No, still figuring it out and figuring out what I like, don't like, what I want to invest in or don't, and just trying to be kind of gentle with myself, which isn't always my profile. So I'm really, really trying to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to keep asking you questions.
Yeah, well, sweet.
I'm hoping that Facebook group gets going.
Yes, right. We'll both be there with bells on if it does. Well, thanks. This was good. Just good discussion. And I mean, I think a lot of people are where we are, either on one end or the other of this journey. So I think this is good stuff.
How can we hear from them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they can email anitalustria@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Good. Hear your thoughts. Would love to read some emails and
connect. Would you forward them to me?
Absolutely. And you can and you can just comment on Facebook over at Friends of Midday or on our individual Facebook pages. Again, head to Friends of Midday and like that page and be a part of the ongoing conversation going on there, too.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, good to talk.
Yeah, you too. I'm Anita Lustria. You too. And this is Faith Conversations.